Welcome to the Jam Pack Report today for July the 2nd of 2023. I'm Jam Pack Sam, and I've been watching the gaming version of Judge Judy all week because Microsoft and the FTC have been going head-to-head, and we have gotten a lot of juicy news stories out of it. Microsoft was trying to spin Sony out of business at one point, and that's a direct quote. We also have Jim Ryan saying Starfield being on Xbox as an exclusive is not anti-competitive, and Satya Nadella would love to see Microsoft get out of the exclusives business in gaming, but Sony has kind of set the tone for how that's treated in the gaming space. We've got all of these stories and more on today's show, so without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into it. Before we get into it, I just want to say this podcast is going to be an overview of the stories that caught my eye and the ones that I wanted to share my thoughts on in particular. By no means is this meant to be a comprehensive recap. And I did want to say Destin Legary over on YouTube has been putting out some wonderful videos that I've been watching every night slash morning, depending on the day, that break down the biggest news coming out of each individual day of the case. So he's done wonderful work over there on his YouTube channel. On top of that, I caught out these three journalists on Twitter that I thought were doing some wonderful coverage. This past week, we've got Tom Warren at The Verge, who I would consider to be an integral part of the coverage of this case because he has been putting out a live blog every single day, and The Verge team has been supplementing him as well, adding additional coverage there. Then Rebecca Valentine at IGN killed it as well. Steven Sotillo at Axios did some wonderful work. Definitely check out these guys if you want the more detailed nitty-gritty coverage of every single thing that happened, because you could spend an entire day digging into this, and I'm pretty sure that I've spent at least 24 hours reading and watching over the past week on this case myself. Now let's dive into the news with Tom Warren over at The Verge, who writes, Microsoft exec was ready to go spin Sony out of business to strengthen Xbox. And this is a quote that has been pulled and thrown across the internet over the course of the past week. But context is king here. Let's get into the coverage. Microsoft's Xbox Game Studios chief Matt Booty was encouraging Xbox CFO Tim Stewart to spend big money on acquiring game content in 2019 to set the company up to battle Sony in subscriptions. That's a very important note here. To battle Sony in subscriptions. The revelation comes in an email thread that's part of the FTC versus Microsoft hearing. Quote, we, Microsoft, are in a very unique position to be able to go spin Sony out of business, said Booty in a December 2019 email referencing spending $2 or $3 billion in 2020 to avoid competitors getting ahead in content at a later date. Quote, it is practically impossible for anyone to start a new video streaming service at scale at this point, said Booty, referencing competitors like Google, Amazon, and Sony. Booty described content as a moat and that only Sony could really compete with Xbox Game Pass. Quote, in games, Google is 3 to 4 years away from being able to have a studio up and running. Amazon has shown no ability to execute on game content. Content is the one moat that we have in terms of a catalog that runs on current devices and capability to create new. Sony is really the only other player who could compete with Game Pass, and we have a 2-year and 10 million subs lead. Now, Microsoft says this is an old email and it never went after this strategy. The direct quote from David Cuddy is, this email is 3.5 years old and predates the announcement of our acquisition by 25 months. The internal exchange was also sealed as part of a separate so-called gamers lawsuit recently. They also say it follows industry trends they never pursued. So, first things first. This is talking about subscriptions. So, to say that this statement is in regards to Sony as a whole in the gaming industry would be a bit of a stretch. Now, you could also make that argument. In my opinion, any executive, or even on a larger scale, any company that enters into a space without the underlying drive to put their competitors out of business is not being competitive enough. This should be an unspoken statement for anybody in any industry. Yes, you want a healthy and robust industry, and competitors are always going to exist. But that drive to be so good that others literally can't compete should be what's driving you each day, because that is what you need to have to be able to have that extra push, that extra oomph to give your consumers the best possible experience. That is why you see McDonald's taking such detail with their recipes and the burgers they produce versus Wendy's versus Hart. They've got to compete. It's the same thing no matter what industry you look at. So I think if there's any one big takeaway from this week as far as the emails go, it's that executives say some very emotionally charged and borderline combative things, whether it's from the PlayStation side of things, the Xbox side of things, or somewhere in between. These emails have been pretty wild. But with Matt Booty here, I think it shows that Xbox is ready to compete and they are being competitive, but the actions they've taken since this email in 2019 shows that not only are they competing, they're also ready to embrace that competition. They are ready to sign these deals that ensure that there's no anti-competitiveness in the industry itself. They've signed cloud gaming deals. They're ready to sign Call of Duty exclusivity deals. There are plenty of different deals going around to ensure other companies exist. I think this just shows a healthy level of competition from Matt Booty and the Xbox Game Studios team. Now jumping into the second part of this story, the email thread is a part of discussing Xbox Game Pass with the rest of the chain redacted, but it looks like Microsoft was considering reversing the idea of day-and-date releases of its own games on Xbox Game Pass in 2019, aka they were thinking about taking the PlayStation strategy here, and this is something Matt Booty was not happy about. He says, if we reverse course on day and date, it's going to be hard to convince folks that things like Mixer or xCloud have much of a chance of surviving scrutiny either. It's worth noting Mixer already shut down. The email shows Microsoft's strategy and thinking around game content for its Xbox Game Pass subscription in 2019, and of course Microsoft has since acquired Bethesda for $7.5 billion and is currently trying to get its $69 billion Activision deal through. Fantastic move by Matt Booty to defend releasing games day and date on Xbox Game Pass, because that is a part, a big part, I might add, of what value is being brought from Xbox Game Pass. They need to have those day one releases because it builds that hype in the community. The fact that I can buy Xbox Game Pass and get access to Halo Infinite on day one, Forza Horizon 5 on day one, things like Starfield on day one, those are very, very, very good deals because that saves a ton of money through the year and it gets more people into your ecosystem buying additional games, spending more time on Xbox. Because if the success metric is now monthly active users, you are going to be growing that across PC, mobile, and console thanks to those day one additions to Xbox Game Pass. So I'm glad Matt Booty is going to bat for that and defending that. And just a lot of interesting takeaways from that one email in particular. But the action gets even hotter because Microsoft considered acquiring Bungie and Sega, amongst others, to bolster Xbox Game Pass. Internal emails show. Tom Warren continues over at The Verge, where he writes, Microsoft was looking at acquiring both Bungie and Sega, according to internal documents from the FTC versus Microsoft hearing. In an email seen by The Verge, Xbox chief Phil Spencer wrote to both Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella and Microsoft CFO Amy Hood, requesting a strategy approval to approach Sega Sammy over a potential acquisition of its Sega gaming studios. Quote, we believe that Sega has built a well-balanced portfolio of games across segments with global geographic appeal and will help us accelerate Xbox Game Pass both on and off console, said Spencer in a November 2020 email. Microsoft believed a Sega acquisition would drive Xbox Game Pass subscriptions across PC, console, and cloud. Quote, the global appeal of Sega's beloved IP will help expand Xbox Game Pass's reach to new audiences around the world, most notably in Asia, where localized content is critical to success, end quote, said Spencer in his pitch to Nadella and Hood at the time. Sega would also offer game transactions value for monetization opportunities in the future. It's not clear what happened with the Sega acquisition and whether Nadella ultimately approved talks, but in a Microsoft internal April 2021 merger review document, Sega was still listed as a key target. Microsoft had identified key areas for acquisitions in PC, mobile, and console across different markets, and Sega, Bungie, Zynga, and IO Interactive were part of a number of companies Microsoft was seriously looking at acquiring. And so we've got a lot of companies on this list that are very interesting as a part of the final watch list. So for audience expansion, they've got Thunderful, Supergiant Games, Niantic, Playrix, and Zynga. I think this shows a very interesting focus on not only games like Hades, as they call out here from Supergiant Games, but also a heavy focus on mobile. And that's kind of the theme that we've been seeing coming out of the FTC versus Microsoft case, because Zynga is massive there. Thunderful, also pretty big there for casual games as well. And Niantic, the creators of Pokemon Go, which would have been a really interesting relationship to see change, because obviously Pokemon and Nintendo probably wouldn't have wanted Microsoft to be in control of what that project looked like. So that would have been a really unique one to see and follow. But on the big company side of things, the big ones down here at the bottom, Bungie, IO Interactive, and Scopely, specifically Bungie and IO Interactive are the ones that draw my eye. Bungie in particular, the former Halo studio, could have been reacquired by Microsoft. It could have once again been an Xbox game studio. That would have been pretty wild to see. And of course, now Bungie is owned by PlayStation, so we will never know what that could have looked like. But As they say here from The Verge, Bungie, a now Sony-owned studio, was on the list, with Microsoft's internal document stating that the acquisition of Bungie will include securing valuable IP, Destiny and its community, and integration of its dev and live ops infrastructure into Xbox Game Studios. Microsoft had identified a high burn rate risk for Bungie alongside NetEase's $100 million minority stake investment in 2018, and also noted that Destiny was one of the highest hours generating titles on console Game Pass. Hitman developer IO Interactive was also on the final watch list in 2021, alongside mobile companies like Thunderful, Supergiant Games, Niantic, Playrix, and Zynga. And they go on to say that Zynga was acquired by Take-Two in 2021. Now, I think that what this shows is that Microsoft isn't just focused on one company. It's not just Activision, Blizzard, or Bust. They have an entire list of companies they would love to bring into the Xbox Game Studios family. And I think that Sega would have been a really interesting move from an international perspective, bringing in more global players around the world. That would have helped support that initiative. But with the Activision Blizzard focus, I think what that shows is that they are focused on growing their existing player base even more in the areas they already have a presence and really strengthening that foothold before they move internationally. Because right now, Sony and Nintendo dominate in other areas around the world, but Xbox has a very strong foothold in North America. And so I think that getting a company that focuses more on FPS games and those traditionally North American-focused games where that audience is really attached shows that they're doubling down and bringing additional value to that existing audience. Not to say that it's not going to grow their foothold even more internationally, because there are certainly people in Asia, in Europe, and other locations that play Call of Duty, that play World of Warcraft, Overwatch, Diablo. Of course, you are going to be growing your player count by a significant margin once those companies and developers are brought into the Xbox Game Studios ecosystem. But going forward, you could see things like Sega get acquired eventually. I think that after the Activision Blizzard deal goes through, they'll end up slowing down a bit just to avoid scrutiny in any kind of way. But I also love the focus on smaller companies. You know, to see things like Thunderful on the list, I think is really nice. Supergiant Games would have been awesome to see, and I think that's more of a PlayStation-level acquisition that I would like to see Microsoft pursue more of and be a little bit more strategic about, because I think that with Activision Blizzard, they're spending a lot of money to get a lot, but I don't know if it's very strategic other than the way that I just described it, where you're trying to expand your existing audience even more in the areas you already have. I don't know if they're thinking about what projects they could potentially put these developers on outside of what they're already working on. You know, like with Sony acquiring Bungie, I'm sure they have a different IP in mind that they would love to see Bungie support, whether it's through literal development or technology. That kind of strategy, I don't know if Microsoft is really thinking about that as much. And that's perfectly fine. Two different approaches to strategy. But these lists and these hidden emails are always interesting to analyze and dig into. And the ironic part of this is that eventually this spreadsheet got redacted. This was actually not meant to be shared. So sorry to Microsoft for talking about it on the show. But hey, it is what it is. A big change apparently happened in 2021. Xbox's Phil Spencer seemingly decided to make all ZeniMax games exclusive in 2021 meeting, according to IGN. Logan Plant has the report where he writes, Phil Spencer apparently made a big decision to make all ZeniMax games Xbox exclusive in a November 2021 meeting. This reveal came to light as part of the final day of testimony in this week's Microsoft FTC hearing. During Xbox CFO Tim Stewart's time on the witness stand, the FTC called attention to a chat conversation from November 2021 between Stewart and Xbox's Matt Booty. The two were messaging about a recent monthly business review meeting between Xbox and ZeniMax, where Spencer apparently made the call to make all ZeniMax games exclusive going forward, not just new IP. Stewart was asking Booty about what happened during the meeting. Quote, all games going forward, Stewart asked. Not just new IP, but all games going forward? Wow. Booty confirmed this during the chat conversation, writing Phil Spencer told them all titles going forward, Xbox exclusive. The two went on to discuss how pulling all Bethesda titles from PlayStation would cause profit issues in Microsoft and ZeniMax's deal model. We will have issues in the deal model as we will pull a huge number of PlayStation units out of model, Stewart noted. This means Xbox and ZeniMax's projected profits after the acquisition factored in releasing some Bethesda games on PlayStation before this decision came down from Spencer. When Spencer testified last week, this is the meeting the Xbox leader claimed he did not remember the specifics of. It's possible we'll get more information, and we did not, because there was no additional coverage on this here from Logan Plant and IGN. So, Big decision from Phil Spencer right here, because this would mean not only will Starfield be an Xbox exclusive, which we already knew, but The Elder Scrolls 6 will be an Xbox exclusive. Whatever Bethesda has cooking down the pipe, new Fallout games will be Xbox exclusive. Doom would be Xbox exclusive. Those are some big changes. And on one hand, this is taking franchises away from PlayStation that have traditionally been on there. But then I think back to things like Morrowind not being on PlayStation. It is what it is. It's the nature of the business. They couldn't get it running on PlayStation. They just put it on Xbox. That is this in a different kind of way. And so, also, in the same breath, if Microsoft is buying these companies, they have the right to do with them what they will. Now, if there are pre-existing agreements, those have been honored, and that's something that we've seen all the way through since ZeniMax was acquired, where every existing game has continued to get support, and any kind of existing deals have been honored. And that's exactly what will happen with Activision Blizzard as well. That's why they're signing these deals. That's why they're inking these contracts, because they want to have something to rely on that shows the path forward, what they have to do and what they want to do. Those are two totally separate topics. And so Phil Spencer making this move, number one, shows a lot of competition. I mean, talking about making The Elder Scrolls 6 an Xbox exclusive, that is a huge deal that will absolutely sell consoles. And so that will strengthen Xbox in the console space and will also eventually strengthen Game Pass. But this shows that strategies can change and projections can change with those strategies. And Phil Spencer is making the calls that he feels is best for Xbox, whether that is generating additional revenue by keeping games on PlayStation or by making some exclusive and strengthening the value of the brand. And it looks like Jim Ryan might not have a problem with that, because PlayStation boss Jim Ryan admits Starfield Xbox exclusivity is not anti-competitive. During the ongoing trial between Microsoft and the FTC, the head of PlayStation took the stand. During his testimony, he was asked if anything was wrong with Arkane Studios' Redfall and Bethesda Game Studios' Starfield being console exclusives on Xbox. "I don't like it, but I have fundamentally no quarrel with it," Ryan replied. When asked how he felt about Starfield skipping PlayStation 5 and being exclusive to the Xbox Series X and S on console, he said, "I don't like it, but I don't view it as anti-competitive." That is a very strong statement, because what is the difference between Call of Duty, which is what Jim Ryan has been focused on, and a game like Starfield? Is there fundamentally a difference? Because while Call of Duty is a very significant franchise, Starfield is one of the biggest games of the year. Fundamentally, they are both video games. They're the same product that are being sold. So what makes one different than the other one? And that's a question that was asked. I know that there's been talk about The Elder Scrolls 6 being thrown around, potential release date, which we'll talk about later. But it undermines Jim Ryan's case, and also it shows that this strategy that Microsoft is implementing by creating exclusives is exactly what everybody else is doing. It's exactly what Nintendo is doing. Sony, anybody, you can pull a competitor out of a hat. Everybody has exclusives, and that's exactly what's happening with Starfield. Jim Ryan is fine with that, and they're doing the exact same thing with God of War, with Uncharted, with The Last of Us. You can list off every big PlayStation exclusive. Even Final Fantasy 16, a third-party game, is a PlayStation exclusive. They're signing these deals. And so I think that Jim Ryan is kind of saving face here and just owning what they do, owning their strategy, in my humble opinion. That being said, Microsoft CEO would love to get rid of console exclusives if it was up to him. This comes from Ed Nightingale over at Eurogamer, who writes, "Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella has said he'd love to get rid of console exclusives. Nadella took to the witness stand during yesterday's court proceedings for the Xbox FTC hearing and stated he has, quote, no love for the world of exclusives. Quote, if it was up to me, I would love to get rid of the entire sort of exclusives on consoles, but that's not up to me to define, said Nadella. Especially as a low share player in the console market, that the dominant player there has defined the market competition using exclusives, and so that's the world we live in. I have no love for that world. The dominant player referenced here, of course, is Sony, known for its high-budget exclusives like The Last of Us, Spider-Man, God of War, and Horizon. Nadella's philosophy is to put software across more platforms. Quote, that's the Microsoft I grew up in. I believe in that. And they go on to talk more about how exclusivity has been a major theme of the court case. They talk about Call of Duty, the different email threads. But I want to focus on this statement from Satya Nadella. Microsoft CEO would love to get rid of console exclusives. I believe this is true. I believe this is actually Nadella's POV, because looking at how Microsoft is approaching the PC space as it comes to gaming, they just want you playing games. They don't care if you're streaming them via cloud in the browser, through Microsoft Edge or Google Chrome or whatever you might have. They don't care if you're buying them on Steam. They don't care if you're buying them on the Xbox app or using Game Pass to play them on the Xbox app. The PC space is kind of like a microcosm of what Xbox would want across the gaming industry. People playing Xbox games no matter where they play them. The reality is that you can't release games everywhere and still be successful as a platform holder, because there still has to be value attributed to Xbox. I think that Satya Nadella's point of view works in an industry where the major platform holders, Nintendo, PlayStation, and Xbox, all are effectively big publishers that would put their games on every platform same day and date as every release on the platforms they own. I think that is where this model could potentially work, but that's not the world that we're living in. We're living in a world where the value of a console and the value of the hardware you own is defined by the games that you have on it. Because if you look at PlayStation, God of War is a big value add for PlayStation. Spider-Man is a reason to have a PlayStation 5. Spider-Man 2 is the biggest game of the year, in my opinion, because that is a very big IP on a very successful console. And in an industry where that is the nature of the business, you can't just put your games everywhere and expect to sell your console. There's got to be some kind of value attributed to it that encourages people to go out and buy one because they can't get the experience they want on another platform. Now, the PC space is kind of freeing that up a bit. If you do want to go out and build a PC, you can play Starfield. But if you are just a casual player like myself who enjoys playing console games, you got to have an Xbox to get your hands on Starfield, whether it's a Series S or a Series X. And so I think that is kind of Satya Nadella's approach here. I think that he would love truly to get rid of exclusives, but that's just the industry that they find themselves in. And it's true. Sony and other market leaders have defined what that actually ends up looking like. And exclusives are what it all comes down to. And it really, according to the judge, comes down to the future of Call of Duty. This comes from Tom Warren over at The Verge, who writes, Microsoft's FTC fight comes down to Call of Duty. The case is over, but who won? The final day of FTC versus Microsoft gave us key closing arguments from both parties and a chance to reflect on this giant hearing. Judge Jacqueline Scott Corley took the opportunity to reflect too. Would she even be sitting here, she mused, if Sony had signed a Call of Duty deal with Microsoft? That's a good point, and it was part of a series of tough questions Judge Corley had for the FTC. The grilling centered on why consumers would be harmed if Microsoft acquired Activision Blizzard, and particularly on how many PlayStation players would switch to Xbox if Activision's key game actually disappeared. The FTC has largely relied on Sony, the market leader in consoles, to back up its theory of harm to competition if Microsoft were to make Call of Duty exclusive to Xbox or sabotage the PlayStation version. It's a theory that has already been rejected by most regulators worldwide, including the European Commission and even the CMA in the UK. Despite this, the FTC has focused most of its case on Call of Duty and Xbox console exclusivity instead of exploring the cloud competition concerns that both the European Commission and the CMA took issue with, the former approving the deal only after securing a remedy from Microsoft about cloud concerns, the latter blocking it entirely over them. That gave the agency a difficult case to prove, and its final dispute hours, the cracks really began to show. They get into the financial weeds of it, but ultimately they talk about Call of Duty, and they really say, the big statement here, all of this for Call of Duty. That's what the argument has been. The direct quote says, all of the evidence you're showing, Your Honor, that Call of Duty and AAA games in particular and some of the other Activision franchises drive gamers. The majority driver, by far, of the synergies from Microsoft comes from driving users to engage and join Game Pass because they understand the value of this content. You've also heard quite a bit about decisions involving ZeniMax. That evidence, Your Honor, is the evidence of Microsoft's incentives when it comes to valuable content. This cut to the main part of the FTC's case. That content and exclusivity is designed to push Game Pass and therefore harm competitors like Sony. This closing argument didn't mention much about the harm to consumers, though, with Judge Corley even pointing out at one point in the hearing, quote, it's not the harm to Sony we care about, it's the harm to consumers. That is a huge statement coming directly from the judge. Judge Corley also wanted to know whether we'd even be here if Microsoft had an agreement with Sony for Call of Duty. Quote, I think we would still have had an investigation, answered the FTC lawyer. The line of questioning didn't ease up either. Judge Corley continued to mention that 62% of all PlayStation owners don't even play Call of Duty at all, referencing data from Elizabeth Bailey, PhD, Microsoft's economic expert. They're not going to miss it. The foreclosure won't affect them. She wanted to establish why Call of Duty was important and whether the FTC's economic expert, Robin Lee, PhD, had actually looked at real-world data in his models. The FTC lawyer struggled to respond here and referenced PlayStation chief Jim Ryan's testimony instead of answering the question related to Lee's testimony. "That's not what I asked," said Judge Corley. The FTC lawyer continued to struggle and explain Lee's report so much that another FTC lawyer had to step in and try to get things back on track. It didn't really help as things went back and forth for quite some time around the point of proving how many PlayStation owners would actually switch to Xbox if Call of Duty was made exclusive. And I just want to pause here. That gives you an overview of what happened on the final day and in the final minutes of this whole case as it was being deliberated. The reality is that Call of Duty won't be an Xbox exclusive. It is going to remain multi-platform, and the deals that are signed right now for 10 years, including one that brings the game to Nintendo Switch for the next 10 years, or future Nintendo platforms, I should say, those agreements can be revisited in 10 years because the gaming space is going to look drastically different in 10 years. These arguments about what it would look like if Call of Duty was made exclusive are irrelevant for the next decade. Now, looking beyond that, the deals would have to be revisited because then Xbox could gain market share. They could think it makes financial sense to make Call of Duty an exclusive. But the judge here is arguing, even if it does, how many players actually play Call of Duty on a regular basis? They talk about how some of the players boot it up once or twice and then never play it again. There are metrics that back that up. So very unique argument to make here for the FTC in comparison to the other regulatory bodies around the world. But we will know how this all pans out by July the 18th. That is the closing date, because then Xbox and Activision Blizzard have to renegotiate their deal. So everything should be done by then. Some are even speculating the deal, or I should say the final verdict, should be in as soon as next Wednesday. So we'll stay tuned. We will follow the story as it continues to evolve. But personally, I cannot wait for this to be over because I'm tired of talking about legal ongoings and really want to get back to the games themselves. So thanks for tuning in for these various FTC discussions, because it has been quite the journey over the course of the past year and a half, and I'm ready for the journey to come to a close. It's like a 5-hour car ride and we're at 4 hours and 30 minutes. Like, please, let's get to the hotel. I'm so done. To wrap up today's show, we have two news stories to touch on. First, the Lord of the Rings Gollum developer is going to close after the disastrous launch of the game. Gollum was so bad that Daedalus Entertainment is closing its development branch in Hamburg, Germany, and has ended development on a second project based on the Lord of the Rings intellectual property, and the company has confirmed this to Polygon. I think that this shows that just because you can doesn't mean that you should. And people have started looking into the history of Daedalus Entertainment. They've made a couple of smaller point-and-click games, but nothing that was on the scale of what Gollum was trying to be. And so I think that there is a reasonable risk that is always taken with branching out and expanding the development. I mean, we saw this with Hello Games and No Man's Sky, where they went from making Joe Danger to making No Man's Sky, and it was a crash and a burn from the very beginning. But they strategized and figured out a way out of that. With Lord of the Rings Gollum, it just seems like this project was kind of doomed from the start. When I first heard about it, people started asking, why would I want a Gollum game? You know, I get a Shadow of War, a Shadow of Mordor. Those are exciting Lord of the Rings games. But Gollum just never really had that same kind of magic. So it is unfortunate. They have said they're going to place the employees from these teams into the network that they have to try and figure out a new route for them and a new path forward from this development team. But if you ever wondered how it panned out with the team behind Lord of the Rings Gollum, we now have our official answer. And finally, news sources say an Assassin's Creed Black Flag remake is on the way. This comes from Kotaku, where they write, Ubisoft is doubling down on its most popular franchises, including Assassin's Creed. Kotaku has learned that strategy now includes a remake of Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, the 18th century pirate fantasy period piece, and one of the more fondly remembered entries in the series. It's what many fans have asked for every time they see a new trailer for Skull and Bones, Ubisoft's other pirate game long trapped in development hell. According to two sources familiar with the plans who asked not to be named because they were not authorized to discuss them, a remake of the 2013 cross-gen PlayStation 3 and 360 game is still in its earliest stages and will not be complete for at least a few years. A team at Ubisoft Singapore, one of the studios that has led development on the Assassin's Creed franchises, Evolving Ocean Tech, will be heavily involved in helping to modernize the Caribbean-based sailing game. A spokesperson for Ubisoft declined to comment. At this stage, it's not clear how much of the underlying gameplay and systems will grow to fit the more sprawling open-world RPG mold of recent big-budget Assassin's Creed releases like Odyssey and Valhalla, but given Black Flag's emphasis on ship-to-ship combat, One of the most popular aspects of the game, there's a lot of room to turn a new version of the game into something more dramatic than a simple next-gen remaster on PS5 or Xbox Series X. And they talk more about Skull and Bones and the development and the studios that are working on that now will then shift to support this project, hypothetically. But I think that this shows that Ubisoft is listening to their audience. They are hearing what people are saying, because when we see gameplay of Skull and Bones, it is a callback to Black Flag, because the game, Skull and Bones, originated from Black Flag. They took that ship combat and they wanted to make it into its own game because people loved it so much. And so now we're kind of going full circle. One of the biggest drawbacks of Skull and Bones ahead of its launch later this year, hypothetically, it got delayed again. But one of the biggest drawbacks is that you can't depart from your ship and go look around an island. It is just pretty much sailing from one point to another. And of course, there are hubs and whatnot, but it doesn't have that same true open world feel as Assassin's Creed Black Flag. And that's what people have wanted. In fact, in this report, they talk about how some of the development teams or members of the development team want to expand Skull and Bones to include those elements that make it a true comprehensive open world experience. And I think that is what players would want. You know, let's say that you made a Blackbeard game. Why would I just want to be Blackbeard on a ship? I want to do some sword fighting. I want to do some treasure hunting. That kind of thing is what I would want from a big open world pirate game. And so them remaking Black Flag fits that need, and it leverages an IP that we all know and love. Personally, I would love to see this. And I know that we talk about how remakes are getting reused too often. Is it really necessary to remake this game? That's debatable, and it really depends on how much they do with it. But a more visually impressive, upgraded version of Black Flag is something I would totally be down for, because I'm a huge fan of the original. So, hoping to see this sooner rather than later, but I would imagine this is a pretty far-out project, if it ever actually sees the light of day at all. But that wraps up today's episode of the Jam Pack Report. If you're new here and you enjoy the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button on YouTube or add the show to your podcast feed of choice and get it delivered right to you every single Sunday, because next week we should be back on the Games Talk. We're getting away from the legal ongoings and back into the games that we all know and love. Lots of good stuff to dig into, so I hope you guys stay tuned. But until next time, you have a fantastic week, and as always, keep on playing.